This is not going well, bruv. She's pulled the plug on the electric.
She's literally gone into the garage and just knocked the power off.
Welcome to the Dubcast. Plug yourselves in for a good show with today's episode, which is episode number 2. Sorry, it's been a while. Dedicated to what is a very hot topic, electric vehicles. I'm your host, Peter Pedlow, and I will be joined by my partners in crime, Mr. Matt Howells.
Good morning, everyone.
My second partner in crime is Mr. Craig Hitman Hart.
Good morning, all.
So now you've met the team, both Craig and Matt are here to join the fun bus. As we said, the start of the show today is going to be about all things electric, a sense of what's happening in the electric market and what, if you're a dealer, what you can do to kind of ready yourself for it. Craig and I are both electric vehicle drivers. Matthew is not. So, Matthew, do you want to tell the audience at home why you don't drive an electric vehicle?
The rationale as to the why behind that, Pete, is... due to the travel distances that I commute, you know, from down here in sunny South Wales up to Manchester and beyond. Now, I'm also more mindful from a personal perspective that when I travel to West Wales at weekends, more rural areas, to the caravan with the family, there is no, you know, charging points there, for example, so that would cause quite a problem us.
No generators.
no jennies in these parts. So that's one. However, you know, I'm midway right with the hybrid in that regard, and we know that the improvement on range around those, hence moving into a new hybrid to give me more of that range. It's still a positive move, in my humble opinion. Others might disagree.
Is it really? So you're moving into this new plug-in hybrid to be more generous to the environment? Is that why you're doing it? Or is it the fact that the battery capacity goes up to around 50 and therefore your taxation on a monthly basis drops down?
It does drop, but it wouldn't drop as much as obviously you guys who are in the full EVs, right, in that regard. So
yeah.
There's that counter argument around that. So
would it be the make model derivative that steered you towards this purchase? Or
hey, gents, I'm all sure we've always got, since being wee lads, a favourite make model that we've... would have loved to have had.
Big lad, no harm to you. Whenever you're a wee lad, there's no such thing as an X5. it was the Ford Model Y. horse and cart when you were a wee lad. So Craig, do you want to tell the audience about your experience with electric vehicles? You've had an electric vehicle now about 18 months, and in that 18 months you've had about 12 Teslas.
Yeah. So I am fully on the electric journey. I've had a Tesla probably for about 2 years now. I wouldn't change it. It's as easy as having a fuel, as you know, a conventional coal powered vehicle. Charger at home.
Coal powered vehicle.
they are obviously very easy to live with. I've got a car charger at home. There is a fantastic Tesla supercharger network which I can use as and when I wish to. I traveled from Surrey up to Manchester yesterday and a little bit back on one charge.
And Craig, what's been the benefit of you since you have moved to EV?
Taxed.
In a nutshell,
no, that's a lie. Two reasons. The first is I want to be a part of the adoption. I like electric vehicles. I think they look cool. I think it is cool. I think it's good for the environment, obviously. I spent 10 years driving a dirty diesel around, and I feel I put a lot of contribution into not helping. So when I had the chance to go electric, I jumped at it. Secondly, I was really interested in Tesla, the whole idea, and the fact that obviously they make a line of vehicles. And I suppose we've got to think about my 6-year-old now is learning at school and comes home and talks about the vehicles that are not electric are hurting the penguins' home.
And I recall you saying that, yes.
And when something like that happens or is said to you from your 5-year-old at the time, it's quite hard hitting. To which I said, of course, I've got an electric vehicle, which I take you to school in. But he said, Mummy's is not.
Do you think about the requirement when you do have to charge, the incremental time taken out of your working day or weekends? Yeah. You simply factor that into your daily plan, right?
So the idea around, obviously, superchargers or rapid chargers is that you can get a quarter or a half of a battery in 15, 20 minutes. And normally that would be enough to get you back, right? So yesterday when I was driving home, I stopped for 15, 20 minutes at the service station, went in, went to the loo, got a coffee, come out. I've got 150 miles in the battery. I unplug, I get back in the car and I go.
I'd be keen to understand, whilst you have no range anxiety, has there been the experience thus far of recharge anxiety? Have you ever got to a destination and been unable to recharge?
Never had that situation.
I'm just mindful of Tesla opening up their charging network to all manufacturers recently and wondered whether that would have...
It was only actually a small proportion that they opened it up to trial it around the country. I think it may have been 5-10% of all chargers were allowed to do so. I was actually at one yesterday up in Manchester near Old Trafford, and there was maybe 15 stalls, electric stalls, and 2 were non-Tesla. I think they're choosing to do that at the destinations where they've got a lot more chargers. Most Tesla supercharger destinations at the minute have got about 8 stalls. Mm-hmm. So I think those ones they're not using. But there's an interesting fact for you. Today's driver is never more than how many miles away from a rapid charge point anywhere along England's motorways and major A roads. So if I'm out on a motorway or an A road, how many miles away on average do you believe I am from a rapid charger in England?
In England, 25 miles.
How did you know that? You've been reading. That's a great fact, though.
That's me and my research, but absolutely. And I guess that will only improve. You know, when was that document published, for example? That will only improve. That said, you mentioned England. There's obviously myself, a fellow Welshman, you know, I'd be intrigued to know how that plays out for the likes of Wales, Scotland and Ireland in more rural parts of the UK. But in the same token, that will improve, no doubt, over time.
What's your thoughts on the government scrapping the plug-in grants?
Well, I guess it's quite a concern because we think about we're quite early on in that, you know, transition. And unless mistaken, I think a year into introduction, 18 months of an introduction of that grant, it's been pulled.
It went from the grant was £5,000, then it went down to £2,500, then it went down to
£1,500.
Now it's actually been scrapped completely. Do you know why they scrapped it?
I can only be presumptive in giving indication. It's down to the mass application and initial cost allocated to fulfill that.
Yeah, it's literally the infrastructure. They need to move the money into the infrastructure. They've put a £950 million rapid charging fund to support 600,000 high-powered charge points across England motorways. An additional £500 million to local councils, local authorities to do it. So let's hope that obviously that money's moved across to do so, right?
Absolutely. And then if you think about that then, though, right, if we think about year on year, we've seen a nigh on 6.5 it's almost doubled, right? The amount of registrations in BEVs, for example, year on year. Yeah. But then you start to think about that point you just raised there around removal of grants for consumers' home installs. And you then think about, you know, facing into the cost of living crisis where, you know, the UK faces a £90 million energy cost hike, you know, due to the cost of energy, and, you know, what impact that will potentially have on mass EV adoption. Will that slow down?
Yeah, what do you think is going to change between now and 2025 that's going to make you comfortable you're not going to have any range anxiety? So as you know, personally speaking, thanks for asking, guys. Personally speaking, as somebody who suffers horrifically because of the car I have chosen, that does at best 145 on a full charge, I live and breathe range anxiety to the extent that I don't take it really anywhere. Because the charging infrastructure in Northern Ireland is pathetic. But, you know, Matt, what do you see changing in a big way in the next 3 years that's going to make you have no range anxiety?
Well, I think the infrastructure in itself, Pete, will have naturally have moved on and progressed significantly in that time frame. Certainly in more rural areas, as I alluded to earlier. So that won't pose as such of a problem. And by then, technology would have moved on in terms of the battery range itself, undoubtedly. And therefore, you know, there would be no concerns around that transition then to go fully electric in that regards. And any of the problems that might be in face now will be alleviated, right?
It's not a long time, right?
And if you look,
I agree. If you reflect on where we've moved in the last 18 months, and you kind of times that by two for the next 3 years, you know, there's significant movement made.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at where we have moved to in the last 18 months in the mainstream, with the exception of the Kia EV6, the Hyundai Ioniq 5, the BMW i4. There's not really a lot out there, obviously Teslas, but kind of take that as a given, that will do close to 300 miles or 300 miles plus, that is available to, dare I say it, the common man. You know, that is the, well, that said, is the challenge. You know, that's the challenge we face. Yeah, you know, I've had the e-tron for 18 months. It's still relatively new technology, but the quality of battery, the range in it is absolutely dreadful. And so, yes, technology will advance, but potentially a lot of the impacts that we're seeing in the supply chains because of COVID in the last 18 months and even looking forward into 2024 could see that technology not advance to the level that it probably was planned to or probably should do in the next 3 years. And secondly, the infrastructure piece, you know,
yeah,
I'm not sure where your caravan is, but do you see there being a huge development in the infrastructure between where you are to where your caravan is to give you the confidence?
Hey, what that looks like, Pete, I'd only be guessing, right? But obviously it would have developed, no doubt. But, you know, right now, further down rural West Wales, there is nothing at all for the ability to charge right now. I've kind of done the research around that. So, that will develop, of course. What that looks like, I mean, I think we'd all be guessing here and now if we gave an indication to that.
Moving forward to kind of purpose of today's chat, and that's bringing it into the typical dealer. So, you know, what can a dealer do to future-proof their business in advance of the revolution? We've kind of considered five key points, right? And if we want to look at the first key point, it's trying to make it as simple and straightforward and kind of the bread and butter, which is learning the lingo. You know, we know, and certainly in my experience, we know the majority of consumers out there wanting to buy an electric vehicle will be better read than any used car dealer ever will be. And there is an awful lot of acronyms to kind of get around. How do each of you find your own knowledge with regards to that?
Yeah, I mean, we you know, it's what we do as a job, right? And we understand what a BEV is and et cetera. But I think, as you said, from a consumer perspective, if a consumer's thinking about stepping into a battery as such vehicle, then they will do their research. We know consumers are doing their research. The difference is the costings between the different types of battery vehicles, right? You've got plenty of hybrids out there. You've got the, you know, the fully electric, the battery electric vehicles, as we've mentioned. But one thing to face into here is the cost of these vehicles as well, right? The cost of these vehicles are not cheap. The manufacturers are pushing towards the higher spec versions of these vehicles, which have got the longer range because they want to show to the world that they are selling the vehicles with the longer range versions. So, yeah, I think it's super important. But for any dealer that is not up to speed with what BEV means, et cetera, then they should do. I was in with a dealer yesterday who had two Nissan Leafs on show, both of them plugged in on charge. And he said to me, I am actively searching for electric vehicles now because consumers are asking for it. And I said, yeah. Well, why are they on charge? And he said, just to show you, just to show how it's done.
Yeah, so to that point, and not wishing to step out of the first one, which is kind of learning what the acronyms are, any tips for dealers who could potentially be listening to this, you know, where they should reach out to? You know, is it simply YouTube videos? And you know, there's a couple of really good guys that I follow on YouTube. Rich Simons is one of them, RSEV. You know, who does the kind of follow tutorials, and I think he actually sells them as well. But you know, I think it's just a case of get out, educate yourself, or educate a team member. You know, make somebody almost like your electric vehicle Jedi. So if you do get any inquiries into your business, there's somebody there that you can almost kind of pass them across to. The second piece you've talked about, which is a really, really good example, and probably the next point I want to get onto, is just ban some electric vehicles. So this specific dealer, do they keep, you know, do they dedicate an area of their forecourt to electric vehicles? Is this just something they've always done, or are they just dipping their toe in the water?
I don't think it's what they've always done. So we had like two Nissan Leafs parked near the front door of where the entrance is for the building on the actual site. Nice site. And I said to him, oh, you've got a couple of electrics out there. And he was like, yeah, I bought them off Auto Trader privately, paid okay money for them, but on the basis that he now wants to step into, you know, this area. Now, funny enough, probably around about 10 minutes from my house on the A3 going into London, which is a very busy road, is a fully electric car dealer, used car dealer, which is probably very, very rare at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine he's going to be ahead of his time compared to a lot of used car dealers out there now, right? But he's doing that because he sees where we're going, right? He's forward thinking. So yeah, you know, takes my hat off to him. I haven't had a chance to go into him, but I want to and just have a chat with him, right? So yeah, it's very, very interesting. But he's got a mixture, obviously, of plug-in hybrid, mild hybrid, fully electric, but no petrol diesels on there.
I think for me, you know, the top. Go on ahead, Matt. Yeah.
No, I was just going to ask you what, you know, based on that basis for a dealer partner, what would be your recommendation around including EVs on their forecourt in the current marketplace?
Yeah, I genuinely think it would be just set inside an element of your forecourt. So if you've got a 20, 30 vehicle pitch, allocate two slots that you kind of dedicate to electric, buy a couple of vehicles. You're never going to go too far wrong if you stick into the more volume, you know, vehicles that have been around for a long time, the like the Nissan Leaf, the Renault Zoe, just to kind of dip your toe in the water. There are some incredible value to be picked up around that kind of level. And to me, the that MG would be a sensible, good model, you know, it'd be a sensible place to start. You know, you'll help because it's like anything. If I think back to when I first started selling cars, you kind of throw yourself in at the deep end, and that's how you typically kind of learn. It's almost a sort of sink or swim piece. And I think if dealers do that, dip their toe in the water, buy a couple, see what type of inquiries are coming in, you know, and the questions that they might get will help them learn that wee bit better. That's what I would do. It's certainly what I would recommend. They don't need to fill the forecourt with electric vehicles. You know, the market is not at that stage just now. You know, we know that the used car stats in Q1 was record numbers for fully electric vehicles switching hands, but it was still only just over 12,000 units. You know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's less than 1% of the used car market, but in 2-3 years time, it's where the market is going. You have to look at the fact that today around 15% of the new car market is fully electric vehicles, and that's going to start drip down across the next 2-3 years, where you'd expect to see 15-20% of the used car market become electric vehicles. So dealers do really need to get a grasp now and understand what it takes to buy an electric vehicle, what it takes to maintain an electric vehicle, and what it takes to sell an electric vehicle. And that starts with, I suppose, understanding.
And how are we seeing the valuations? How are we seeing the valuations month on month for the likes of EV in the market? Granted, the last 18 months record growth in general used cars, but how has that fared for EVs particularly?
Great question. Shouldn't have said great question. Rich would absolutely break my knuckles for that one. Rich Mason, if you're listening, we have learned, we promise. Need to tag him on that one. How have we seen the valuations? Yeah, so valuations across the last 18 months have been incredible for everything. Valuations in the last 3 months have started to normalize. The drop from May until June was less than 1%. In truth, in the electric vehicle market, some vehicles are still increasing slightly in value, where there may be slightly more demand. E-tron as an example, they are still seeing an increase in used car prices.
Here's some stats for you around the sales of electric vehicles. So an electric vehicle on average on Auto Trader took just 27 days to leave a forecourt, compared to 33 and 35 days for petrol and diesel. So they are shifting fast in the market. And 7 of the top 10 fastest selling cars through June were electric, with the Mini Electric the fastest selling of all.
Interesting.
And that's data released from Auto Trader. So that shows how consumers are behaving, right?
It does.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what the supply is like.
Yeah.
You know, because we know if in areas in the market, 7 out of electric vehicles in areas in the market where supply is quite plentiful, SUVs as an example, DSSL has increased over the last couple of months as a consequence of there being more supply than demand. We know demand is going to be huge in relation to supply in the used car market for fully electric vehicles, because there isn't a huge amount of them kicking about. You know, and kind of getting back to that point, it's the old field of dreams scenario. You know, if you build it, they will come. You know, if you buy an electric vehicle, dip your toe in the water, you will generate inquiries, because there is an absolute, you know, I wouldn't say peak interest now. You know, peak interest has been kind of there for quite a considerable period of time. And as the price of fuel gets to £2 per litre and above, you know, you're not a kick in the ass off, you know, £10 a gallon in that respect. So if you compare that to the fact that, you know, the average car might do 50 miles to the gallon, so it's going to cost you £10 to do 50 miles. You know, an electric vehicle to charge overnight might cost you somewhere in the region of £6 or £7 to do anywhere between 140 to 300. So clearly for those who are of the financial position that they can afford to maybe pay a bit more for a vehicle, but save themselves considerably in their running costs
in the long run.
Absolutely. It's definitely something to.
But that does actually take us perfectly into the removal of the government grant for the £1,500 towards the home charger, right? very interesting subject.
All grants have gone from the government.
Yeah.
And that's it is an issue and it isn't. You know, you may or may not have seen the post, you know, that I put up on LinkedIn. In truth, whilst it may be an unpopular opinion, I kind of welcome that if the money goes into the infrastructure.
I agree.
On the basis that the grant had been considerably diluted anyway, and there wasn't really much that as a consumer you could really qualify for because of how new car prices have really gone through the roof in the last year or 16 months. So if they're going to take all that money, invest it heavily into infrastructure, as somebody who lives in a country whereby at any one moment in time there are 5 rapid charger, you know, catering for a population of nigh on 2 million people, it's horrendous. You know, it is absolutely horrendous. So clearly, if they're looking to divert that budget into something else, which the majority of consumers need to really eradicate the nervousness around adopting electric vehicles, bring it on. Like, absolutely bring it on.
So the government have earmarked £950 million for
Northern Ireland only.
Yeah, just for Wales, for Matt's area between him.
Just so we can get the caravan and home again.
Yeah, of course.
With a jet ski on the back.
But, and that's a big but here, right? You know, they are also heavily reliant on the private sector to help out with these chargers, gyms, supermarkets. You know, they can't do it all on their own. You know, there is businesses out there that are including chargers at places. Workplaces have got to step up as well to do it for the people who are commuting to work as well. So I think if the government can use the money wisely into an infrastructure that will help with range anxiety, I believe it can only be a good thing, right?
Yeah, I completely agree.
So stat for you guys, a question while we're here, question time. Today, a driver is never more than how many miles away from a rapid charge point anywhere along England's motorways or major A roads? How many miles on average am I away from a rapid charger on any of England's motorways or A roads?
Feels like to me about 3 miles. Because that's where Boris Johnson wants to spend all his money. Going to pump it all in around Farnborough.
In the M25.
Yeah, all in around the Farnborough direction. That's where I'm going to pump all the dough.
But actually, you know, jokes aside, it's 25 miles. So if you're using the motorway network or A roads, 25 miles is not that far. So range anxiety in those areas, I think, is less. It's more in Matty's neck of the woods or in Northern Ireland where you are.
It's the rural areas, right, that it poses the risk of range anxiety for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Southwest Yorkshire, all of those areas, right? Scotland.
Have you had Northern Ireland stats, Craig?
I'd not. No, I was hoping you were going to bring them to the
table. Yeah, you're never any more than 250 miles away from a charger.
Yeah,
that's all good in a Tesla.
It is stressful.
It's not in the e-tron,
but the difference is the charger that you're really close to is a 22 kilowatt charger, so you need to plug your Tesla and leave it for 5 hours.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The one at home for sure.
And there'll also be 25 people queued at it, so you got to join that queue, which is going to take you about three weeks.
That was my point I raised, right? So again, asking that question of you have, rather than, you know, the range anxiety, having to wait for that. And Craig, you alluded to you've never had to experience.
No, I may be lucky. Yeah, I may be lucky, but no, I haven't had to wait at a charger. I was at a charger at Old Trafford in Manchester yesterday, and it was one of the Tesla ones where they'd opened it up to other drivers, electric drivers. And I believe they've only opened it up to a small percentage, but it's the bigger sites. So it's like 15, 20 chargers there. And I was sat next to a Hyundai and an MG yesterday. They were charging up theirs, right? But there was no issue. So I've not had to wait, but I'm sure there is many people out there that have had to. The thing is, when you look at the rapid chargers that are at service stations, there isn't many. There's two or three. And if you've got a car park full of, or if there's 10 in there, you're right. There, people are going to be waiting and they will naturally get a bit annoyed with it. That's what needs to change. It has to be for the masses, not just for Tesla or whoever, right?
Yeah, and then thinking about that applied to the workplace, right? And we start to see adoption of, you know, workplaces installing chargers. And you think of some of the larger employee workforces, if I think of the likes of the NHS, for example, where there can be, you know, several hundred staff alone at one location. And obviously there may only be up to a handful of chargers available in that regard. So again, you know, does that potentially pose a problem in infrastructure and wait times for people of, you know, large employee levels at a workforce location? So again, it sounds like I'm being negative. I'm just being realistic here, gents, around some of the challenges that may be placed in certain workforce.
Yeah. You know, I don't necessarily buy into the fact that workplace charge.
Check this out. So, you know, when we were talking about supply and demand for electric vehicles,
obviously
demand being higher than supply. Retail rating takes both into account, as we know, yeah?
Of course, as within well a 50-mile radius, of course. Yeah,
as well as that average days to sell. So the Mini Electric is a 99.93 retail rating vehicle.
With an average days to sell of 24, right?
Yeah. So that supply, demand, and average days to sell takes into account the supply element of it as well, which must back up the fact that there is a decent amount of supply. Otherwise, it would lower that number, right?
Yeah.
It would have an effect on it. Now, obviously, we don't know the algorithm behind it, but it's interesting to see.
And to be fair, the top 10 are all sub 26 days. The top, you know, that's quite a quick speed.
Look. So the 10th vehicle is a Fiat 500, which is a petrol manual. The rest are obviously, tell a lie. There is three petrols in that top 10 of fastest selling vehicles in June. The rest are electric. Yeah. It's interesting how they produce that 99.93, but within the tools they don't do the 0.93, do they?
No, and then to that point, which you'd expect a correlation, right, around EVs top in the lists, right, by location.
Yes.
And you think of the densely populated areas, the congestion charge areas, Midlands, London, it's where EVs top those lists for the regions.
Of course.
Which, again, I'm not saying people don't buy out of those areas, but, you know, there is that correlation, as you'd expect.
Yeah, they'll always be higher in those areas which are more condensed, but at the same time,
there's and just to back that up, right? We talk about, so obviously you're in England, referencing England, Pete's in Ireland, I'm referencing Wales.
Yeah.
An interesting stat for you: in four countries, EVs haven't made the top 10 at all, including Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales.
Yeah, shows why, right? We know the reason why.
Yeah. So, you know, EVs didn't make the top 10 at all for Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales in that regard. So it's interesting.
If you enjoyed the show today, please do hit the follow button and ding that notification bell. If you didn't enjoy it, what's wrong with you?
That was a good 27 minutes of content.
That's all for today, folks. Thanks very much for joining us. If there's anything you'd like to hear about in more detail, you do have the ability to get in touch. Drop along to the description of today's episode and towards the bottom you will see send in a voice message with a link. Click on that, record something, be that a question, be that a bit of feedback, and send it across to us. In the meantime, we'll see you again in a couple of weeks.